Hello, and welcome to the Adventure Options Podcast. You want adventures, and you have options. In this episode, I interview Marcel Perkins, who is the owner of Latin Trails based in Ecuador. Have you ever looked at an abandoned factory and thought, I bet I could make a yacht out of that? Well, if you haven't, then you need to listen to Marcel's story. As always, this podcast is sponsored by Adventure Writers, copywriting for the travel industry. There are 4.6 billion web pages out there. Make sure yours stands out. Go to adventurewriters.agency for help. That's adventure, WRITERS.agency. Now for the show. Marcel, welcome to the podcast. I am excited to interview you today. Now, you are the founder of Latin Trails, correct?
Yes, that is correct. I started the company around 2002 as part of a dream to create jobs in Ecuador through tourism.
Your life in the travel industry, though, started well before this company. You started traveling before you were even 1 year old.
Yes, I was born in the States, New Jersey, but my mother's Ecuadorian, and she decided she wanted us to, me and my brother and sister, she wanted us to see Ecuador, to meet her parents, her family, and to see what, you know, the other side of the world was for us, well, the other hemisphere, if you want to call it that way. And I grew up between New Jersey and Ecuador.
Was your dad from New Jersey then?
Yes, he's from New Jersey. He also loved the idea of visiting Ecuador. He was always he's always had a tremendous love for South America in general. And we enjoyed traveling a lot. But eventually, when I was 16 years old, we decided to move to Ecuador, and on a full-time basis, basically because of lifestyle, because of, we had more family in Ecuador than we had in the United States, for one part. And families are very tight here in Ecuador. So it's a lot of, that's what really drew us to Ecuador.
That's a really big move. Now I've got to ask, how did your parents meet?
Well, my mother, she's a nurse initially. That's her main profession. And she moved to New Jersey because they needed nurses, and there's always a need for nurses everywhere. So she decided to move to New Jersey. She was learning English. My dad was helping her out. And they met at one of the hospitals.
Oh, that's so cute. That's such a cute love story. So moving to Ecuador at the age of 16, you had been there several times. So did you still feel like it was a culture shock to move there, or not really?
Well, you know, until I was 12, I really didn't appreciate traveling outside of the U.S. that much because it was outside of my comfort zone. But after that, you know, when you, as a teenager, I found it more that I had a richer social life in Ecuador in general. I mean, you know, the people, the family, actually, we had in Ecuador about 20 cousins altogether, and then in the United States I had 3. So, and I couldn't see them more than once, maybe a year. In Ecuador, I saw them all the time. It's a smaller country. It just made more sense for us in that sense. And yes, there was a culture shock because Ecuador is still today, we still have what we would call like an Ecuadorian time when things go a little bit slower. You know, but back in when I moved here, when I was 16 years old, we'd say a meeting was at 8 o'clock, it would start at 9:30. Because the concept of stress and time was totally different. You did not have to run for anything. Now, things have changed a bit. Now in Ecuador, you say 7 o'clock, maybe it starts at 7:05, but it will start on time. So that is actually something. In a way, you miss it, but as a business person, you want things to start on time. But on the other hand, when you think of it, the way lifestyle was back, you know, X years ago, it's a lot more hectic now, actually. It's coming into the modern days where every place around the world, you know, runs on you know, standard time, not on island time, as you would say.
Right. It does. It reminds me a lot of, yeah, the islands, the island people. They're usually a lot more laid back and relaxed about their time. So yeah, that reminds me of that. So then walk me through, you moved there when you're 16. What's your career path to starting Latin Trails? How old were you when you started that? Did you do anything in between the two of those?
Yes, of course. Well, I actually, my background was marketing and finance, but at an early start, I realized I was not really going to go into the corporate world and be wearing a suit and tie. I just didn't feel comfortable with it at all. And with my parents, we always, I grew up with them working a lot with Doctors Without Borders and bringing people to remote areas in Ecuador to do social work, both on a formal or on an informal basis. So I kind of grew up into the travel industry. I knew how to arrange programs all around the country. I knew what to, you know, especially speaking about doctors, you know, they have a very high comfort zone, but when it goes into rural areas, and to doing social work, they don't mind getting out of it. But that was a special occasion. But when you talk about people going on vacation, they still want to keep you on their comfort zone. So I knew actually both sides of the travel, where you have this really adventurous expedition, but also you had to have the high standards there at all times. So I kind of grew up into that. Then I started working for a large cruise company in the Galapagos. So I say large because, you know, in Galapagos, most boats are 16 guests. And in such a fragile destination, having a 100 passenger boat for me is large. Yeah. Yes, I know. Around the world, there's 3,000 passenger boats and everything. I would never want to see one of those arrive in the Galapagos because it would just not make sense. But for such a small and unique destination, a 100 passenger boat is large.
So what did you do on that boat, that first boat that you worked on?
I was actually on the marketing side of things. So I made sure that, you know, people got to know about the boat, that they could see, basically working with companies from all around the world and selling Galapagos as a destination and Ecuador as a destination. My problem there was that the main sale point was the Galapagos and the boat. But I wanted to, I mean, I had a love affair with my country, with Ecuador, my mother's country, if you want to say it that way, because I love the U.S. as well. I wanted to show more than the Galapagos, and I'll start guiding if I have to. Well, as I mentioned, I was working for what we would say one of the larger cruise lines in the Galapagos. The main focus was promoting the Galapagos Islands, but I wanted to show more of Ecuador. So based on that breaking point, I decided, you know, to step aside and form Latin Trails. We incorporated as a small company with one person, myself. But I started guiding. And I started guiding travelers from English-speaking countries, basically from Australia, from Great Britain, from the United States, from Canada. And I was guiding for tour operators that were in these countries, or wholesalers, I would call it. But eventually I gained their trust, and then they started giving me arrangements, you know, in organizing, booking hotels for them, organizing transportation, hiring chefs to put a private dinner in a special location. And that's when, you know, the company started to take place, and I had to hire people. So eventually we started offering only community based tourism. But I realized that you know for people to really take interest in Ecuador and to organize a full program around the country, they definitely wanted to visit the Galapagos Islands. So it's something that, you know, they didn't want to leave out. So we had to find a way to offer everything around Ecuador. So the company started growing. Eventually we took on a lease on one yacht when we started from one of the shipyards. We custom built it, taking into account our experience, in my experience at least, in the cruise industry, but making it small scale, only for 16 guests, which made a lot more sense for the type of company that we have. And that's how we started with the cruise part. We then went on to a second yacht, which we built as our own, which is the Galapagos Sea Star Journey. It's a luxury boat. We built that in 2011, and we built it from the ground up, basically from a recycled cement factory.
Oh, cool.
We bought, there was a cement factory in the city of Guayaquil that was going to scrap, and they were selling it as scrap metal. So we bought the entire factory, and what we pulled out was the keel of the boat. This is the base. So it's like an iron rail that was actually holding the whole factory up, and it was just part of it. And just to give an idea, in the market in that day, that keel would have costed us about $500,000. And the entire cement factory costed us $25,000. Yeah, we turned around and sold it for $50,000. So we got the keel for free, and we made a profit on, you know, selling this old cement factory. And we got what we wanted from there. And, you know, just by being creative, we saved a lot of money. And that way we were able to actually build one of the most iconic yachts in the Galapagos, the Sea Star Journey, which has won 2 years in a row the World Travel Awards, because it's an upmarket boat with an extremely high level of comfort for a small yacht, and with really upmarket features in that sense. And that was back in 2011.
And it's recycled. I think that is so cool.
Yes, a lot of the, it's recycled, and it's everything on board is handmade, but custom designed for the Galapagos Islands, with taking into all the features that we felt we needed to offer the ultimate expedition. So that's one part of the story. Then we've grown as a travel company. Right now, in our offices, we have about 30 people, but all together with the staff on board the boats, the two yachts, we have another, we have about another 30 to 40 people there. And last year in December 2017, we opened a small hotel in the downtown area of Quito. It's called Ila Experience Hotel. This is a restored colonial mansion. And what it holds is our family traditions, especially for my wife's family, because she comes from a more extended family from the northern part of Ecuador. And we were always hosted at her grandma's house for birthdays or celebrations, and we would be 100 people together. And taking into, looking into the hospitality from her grandmother, which is probably, it's just amazing. I've never felt so welcome anywhere in the world. And just taking in that example, we asked permission from her, and we brought her traditions and our hospitality to this small home in the historic downtown of Quito. And now it's a luxury hotel. It's been featured by Time Magazine as one of the 100 greatest places to visit this year, just a few months after opening.
So then what does a typical guest do? Do they usually do all three, where they stay at your hotel and then go to the yacht and then go to the interior? Or is it more of a like pick and choose between all of those?
It's a pick and choose, because as a company, we work on a business-to-business basis. Mainly. I mean, we do work with the direct guests that contact us, but that's about, I would say about 10% of our business. The most of our business is actually working with other travel companies, not just around the globe, but in Ecuador, because there's a lot of small tour operators in Ecuador that don't have a boat or don't have a hotel. So they will book into our boat and they'll book into our hotel. And we're very respectful about that relationship. And you know, and about their clients. So we try to market through them mainly, because they've supported us from the very beginning. And of course, we also work with a lot of companies abroad, mainly in English speaking countries, and in Germany, Switzerland, where we have let's say you would call them tour operators or wholesalers. And they put together the programs and they sell them through travel agents or direct to the public. And then that gets booked to us. So we actually, it's like putting pieces of puzzle together. Sometimes we only sell spaces on our yachts, or sometimes we'll sell room nights at the hotel, or we'll sell a full circle program around Ecuador. Now, what we really, and what is the core of our business that we try to push most, is the round trips around all of Ecuador, including the more remote areas as well, because we have a strong relationship with different communities, with the people from the Otavalo indigenous community in the northern part of Ecuador. In the south, we work a lot with the Saraguro community. In the Amazon, we work with the Ashuar, the Quechua, and the Shuar communities, as well as the Copanes. So we actually work with all regions around the country and with all different ethnic groups. And this actually allows a visitor to see things they cannot see anyplace else in the world, like these tribes from the Amazon, for example, the Shuar community. Back in up until the 1940s, 50s, they still had the process of shrinking heads as head hunters. It's a cultural treasure they have. They don't do it anymore because it's an ethical issue, but they explain the tradition. Now they would do it maybe with a pet they've lost, maybe a pet monkey or a pet sloth that they've had, and, you know, within the community, they will shrink the head to keep it as a memory, but not with people anymore. And it's a culture that is rich. So it's an anthropological experience as well to visit them, but also cultural and unique. And it's seeing the rainforest through their eyes is a totally different story.
I imagine. And Ecuador is so diverse for such a small country. I know when I lived there, there's just such a big difference between, like you said, the Amazon part, the mountainous part, the coastal part. And then you have, you know, Quito is a gigantic city. You have all these, all this diversity in landscape and in experience all within the same relatively small country.
Yes, actually, that is one of the main advantages of Ecuador, because being small and being diverse, of course. I mean, you can't leave aside that it's one of the most diverse countries in the world, and it's actually the most diverse country per square meter on the planet. If you think of it in terms of biomes or environs, you would see that, you know, as you move away from the equator towards the pole, you go through tropical rainforest, you encounter cloud forest, and you encounter tundra. Well, in Ecuador, this happens on a vertical basis, actually. You know, by the coast or by the Amazon at sea level, you'll find tropical rainforest. As you go up into the Andes, you'll find cloud forests. You go through Andean forests, then you're going through the tundra or strawlands, and then eventually you'll reach glaciers. And just to give an example, you could have breakfast in the Amazon, lunch in the Andes, and dinner by the beach, on the beach, so you could experience a good part of the country in a short amount of time. The longest flight within continental Ecuador is 30 minutes.
Hey, I want to switch gears for just a minute. I noticed on your website you offer an option where people can participate in reforestation efforts. Do you want to talk about that for a minute?
There's several projects in terms of reforestation. For example, one of them is in the highlands of Santa Cruz Island in the Galapagos Archipelago. Visitors go to the highlands of Santa Cruz to visit the giant tortoises, which is one of the iconic animals of Galapagos. But also in this area, there's farmlands that are part of the life of the first colonizers of the islands. Well, now a lot of this land has lost its endemic trees, and there's a second growth. Now, guests, when visiting the tortoises, have the option to participate in a reforestation program to bring back the original trees or the native trees and replant them in certain areas of the highlands of Santa Cruz, for example.
That's
one of the options. There's another option, for example, in the Amazon rainforest, there's several lodges. To name a couple of them, there's Cascada Lodge. It has over 2,000 acres of protected forests. San Isidro Lodge as well protects forests. There's a lodge called Hakuna Matata, which we are a part of. It protects a small patch of rainforest that has been brought from being farmlands back to secondary growth. And now with a project that has actually been established under law to continue until it returns to be primary forest again.
Okay. I want to stay at the Hakuna Matata Lodge. That is so cool.
Yes, it's a small lodge with 18 rooms that we are partners with a couple other companies. And the entire staff is from the local community. But the lodge itself, as I said, it protects 124 hectares right now of let's say this used to be cattle grounds at some point, but it's been 13 years that it's actually been brought back to secondary growth forest, and maybe another 80 years from now it'll be primary rainforest. So it's going to be kept that way, and to grow as part of the lodge itself. We'll be financing the growth in land, and eventually the idea is to add more land to be brought back to rainforest.
That is really cool. And what a fun thing for guests to participate in.
Yeah, and it's more than being part of the regrowth of it. It's just getting to know the local culture, visiting the rainforest in a safe environment, without leaving the comfort zone, but at the same time supporting the local community, because the local community depends on the lodge. Also supporting the possibility of, you know, bringing back land that was, you know, completely reforested back to having trees, native trees, and, you know, and bringing an environment where the wildlife can continue to live.
Definitely. Now, do you think that these trips, would you say that they are family friendly, like the kids could go, or would you say no, probably more like for just adults?
Absolutely. No, Ecuador is a very family friendly destination. For example, in the Amazon, families would actually have the option to go deeper in the Amazon than with Hakuna Matata and then a couple of the other lodges I mentioned. You also have a lodge that's called Napo Wildlife Center, which is extremely beautiful, and it's within a community that is right at the border of the Yasuni National Park, and it's 100% community run. It's one of the most beautiful lodges in all of South America, I would say, and it is family friendly. But people sometimes prefer Hakuna Matata because there's no mosquitoes there, for example.
So you just sold me. You just sold me on the no mosquitoes.
it's not as deep inside the forest as other locations, but you know, there's something for everyone. If you want, you know, an adults only maybe experience, you probably take on one of the departures in the Galapagos where there's only adults on board the boat. But it's definitely child friendly because it's a safe place. I mean, you're not getting involved into extreme sports all the time to have to enjoy the location. You can enjoy it on a slow pace as well. You have a lot of cultural venues and interaction with local people, and you learn a lot about nature. So what a better place to bring up kids or bring, you know, the entire family for a gathering than such a beautiful natural location than Ecuador and the Galapagos Islands. On the other hand, if it's an adult only vacation, that means just basically choosing the dates and choosing specific departures at lodges, at hotels, or at onboard boats where you'll be only with other adults, and that's fine as well.
That's perfect. Marcel, it's been a pleasure to talk to you about Latin trails and just your background and Ecuador in general. Ecuador will always have a little piece of my heart, so it's always fun to talk about it. I like to end these interviews by asking two questions, and the first one is, you know, where's your favorite place to go? When you vacation, where do you like to vacation? And the second one is, what piece of advice would you leave for today's traveler?
Okay. Well, answering your first question, it's going to be a little bit odd to hear this from me. It's actually one of my favorite places is in Ambuki, the northern part of Ecuador, mainly because we get to visit my wife's grandparents. She still has her grandparents. So my kids get to enjoy their great grandparents. And at this location, we tend to go at least 6 or 7 times a year, and we gather up as a family. So it's I think family values in Ecuador and in our family, it goes above the destination in this case, because we get to really gather together, enjoy what is really for us is, let's say, that is not renewable. A lot of people say trees are not, you know, a lot of energy is not renewable. A lot of locations around the world are not renewable. And, you know, they're being lost in time. Well, for us, my wife's grandparents are not renewable. And, you know, my children's great grandparents are not renewable. So we give a preference towards that first. And the location where they live in Ambuki, this northern part of the Andes of Ecuador, it's a small haven within the mountains with beautiful scenery, nice areas to hike, a lot of orchards with, you know, family grown fruit gardens, and it's a dry area. So it's a nice, warm, dry weather, not completely deserted, but with running rivers that go through. So it's like a small oasis valley in the northern part of Ecuador. And that's actually one of our favorite locations, but because of the people we meet there, our family.
That is so sweet. That's not odd at all. That's really sweet.
So that's actually my favorite place to go on vacation. I know the world has so many beautiful places, but again, it's this point in time in our life where this is the most valued treasure we have. And then the other advice for travelers, well, this is going to be, I mean, there's so many things I can advise, but one of the most important things I would actually suggest is wash your boots before you board the plane. Because the biggest challenge our planet is facing is introduced species all around the world, from people traveling from one place to another, carrying seeds or different, you know, species on their shoes, and they don't know it. So one of the biggest challenges for us, for example, we participate in several eco projects in the Galapagos through IGTOA. IGTOA is the International Galapagos Tour Operator Association, and we have a conservation fund. And the biggest challenge is to stop invasive species in the Galapagos. The country's done it well because they have a way of, you know, fumigating the planes and washing your shoes when you arrive. And they have these small, you know, these small soap puddles that you walk through that will clean them. But, you know, other places around the world don't have it. And they have these unique environments, you know, let's say like islands in general. You know, you talk about Easter Island, you talk about Australia's an island, you know, but they have native species. But if you don't wash your boots or your shoes, you're bringing in invasive species, and this could actually destroy the entire native population, and you don't know it. So I would say my biggest piece of advice is wash your boots.
That is quite possibly the most unique piece of advice we have had on the podcast. That was awesome.
So it sounds like common sense, but it's not. It's not as common to see people do that because when, you know, you go out to your backyard, you have plants there, you have your garden or whatever, and then you have seeds that stick to your feet, to your shoes. Then you take them to another location, and maybe those seeds are they're from a plant that can grow very easily in another location, but there's another native plant that, you know, that grows slower. This plant will take over, eliminate it, and just without noticing, you might be taking out the entire food source for a native type of mouse, and it's going to disappear someday. So that's actually the biggest cause of extinctions, could be invasive species.
No, I think you're spot on that. There's a book out right now that's super popular that's called Girl, Wash Your Face. So we're going to write a book called Traveler, Wash Your Boots.
Okay.
Let's see if we can get it to be as popular. Marcel, it's been a pleasure to have you on the podcast. Thank you so much for coming on.
Well, thank you for having me. And it's been such a pleasure, Shingman. Hopefully we can meet sometime in person.
Shayna here. Marcel's love of family is endearing, isn't it? Wash your boots and take some time to enjoy this beautiful world. Till next time, nos vemos.